Mr. Don Reynolds, Reel 2. Now, we're talking about the effects of war, you know, in the early years of the war, while you were still at school and at home. What about air raid precautions? I mean, were you very aware of that? Did you have shelters at school and at home?
I can't really remember what the arrangement was at school. We didn't have any underground shelters, and I can't really remember any precautions or any efforts to clear it. I don't think I remember very many alerts even.
Did you have a shelter at home?
At home, we got this house which had about a quarter acre, and we actually dug a shelter. A fairly big shelter, in fact, along the top of the lawn.
Now, was this an Anderson, or was this a homemade?
No, this was a homemade. It was a proper bunker. It would be 25 feet long.
How deep?
Probably about 5 or 6 feet deep.
And what was the roofing?
The roofing, I think, must have been a proper roof, bricked roof, with the grass top and everything else. It formed a wall between us and the top of the field, as it were. And
you built it, but did you actually use it?
Not a lot. Its principal use, I think, was for keeping apples and various other things in. No, it wasn't used a lot, because we didn't have a tremendous lot of raids that affected us locally.
Now, your father was in the ARP, wasn't he?
He was.
Or was he just connected with organising?
He wasn't actually in the ARP. What his position was, actually, I can't remember. He was a sort of liaison.
With the council?
From the council.
Were you a runner or anything for the ARP, or, you know, have boys sometimes get involved in that sort of thing?
Well, yes, I was. I became his runner, and it didn't amount to very much, really. But the Home Guard and the rest of them, We had quite a good Home Guard, I think, in Hucknall, although I didn't know a lot about them, because I was too young.
So you weren't in that?
I wasn't in the Home Guard.
What did you do as an ARP runner? I know it wasn't much, but were you trained at all, or did you do anything at all, or was it just a thing you were told you were one?
No, the only real experience I had as a runner that I can recount, there was an exercise where people were infiltrating Hucknall. They were coming up the railway line from Bulwell, and when it gets up towards Hucknall, you get the Hucknall station, and then there's a long cutting, and on the top, on one side of the cutting, was the house that was the headquarters of the local Home Guard. And it, of course, was actively out and so on, trying to defend the town. And there was some specific message that was required to get through from the ARP Home Guard. My father gave me this message, which was to get to the police station down at the bottom of Beardwall Street. It's only about half a mile, or not much more, but I set off with this message on my bike, and taking the thing very seriously, in perhaps a Just William type of action, I went without my lights on. And when this chap saw me going down towards the police station on the bike without my lights on, he pulled me in, this Bobby, and he took me into the station and put me in front of the desk sergeant or whoever it was that was there at the time. And although I passed over the message, I got a good ticking off and a view of the cell for riding without lights. And I thought this was a little bit much at the time. So I probably had a rather poor opinion of the local police. But basically, we didn't have, apart from this, I don't have a lot of memory of calling on the ARP or anything. I used to call in at the local spot, which was not far from home. Used to go there and see that they'd got their cup of tea all right and the rest of it, but I wasn't too closely involved.
Was there any bombing of the area, Hucknall area?
Not a lot. I can't... There were one or two in the Bulwell area on the golf course. A couple landed and fairly close, I think, to the railway line. But I just can't pinpoint anywhere that actually got hit in Hucknall.
Now, what about, perhaps look at things like rationing. I mean, how did the food rationing affect you?
At home, we set up 6 chickens. We got enough room for that, and we put a wire up and the rest of it, and we had 6 chickens, which gave us a little bit of assistance. But we were lucky. We'd got about 4 or 5 apple trees and a pear tree, I think, on our small plot. And so one thing or another, we managed to give a little bit of variety to the things that we could get from the local shops.
So it didn't affect you that much? Not badly, then?
Not badly, not
what
badly.
What about clothes rationing? Did that bother you at all as a growing lad?
I don't think it did, really. We seemed to get away with things.
Now, did you carry on in the air training corps? Because I know you do some Army Corps, Training Corps as well. I mean,
yes,
when does that happen? What?
The Air Training Corps was definitely a school operation. And then there was one evening of scouts, and there was one evening probably of the Army Training Corps.
Oh, so you were in both at the same time?
Yes.
Now tell me about the Army Training Corps.
Well, that gave us...
Were they the Army Cadets then? Or
Yes, the Army Cadets. There again, we'd got a uniform. I was able to, in the long run, I was in all 3 colours of uniform, which seems rather remarkable. But we did a certain amount of sort of parade drill.
Now, where was it based at, the Army Cadets?
I think it was based at the Boys' Brigade in Hucknall, which was at the rear of the Baptist Church. And I think that's where we operated. We used to do a certain amount of typical army preparations, drill and the rest of it. And the thing that sticks out in my mind, probably, we used to do tracking and this sort of thing, almost the type of thing that I was interested in doing with the Home Guard against the insurgents. And I can remember well going up doing an attack, as it were, on Annesley, which is only a couple of miles away, but we did it going behind the hedgerows and that, rather than marching along the road and all this type of thing. And up at Annesley, there was a range where a couple of times we did shoots. Getting the rifle into action was very interesting, and so on. It just added to life's experience. But the other thing that, about the army that really rings the bell, I must by now, I suppose, have left school.
Oh, well, we'll carry on with the army. I'll come back to that. Carry on with the army cadets.
With the army cadets, the thing that I remember most, having left school, I was too young, of course, to do very much. They didn't even allow you to volunteer until you were a certain age. I think it was probably 17 and a half, or 17 anyway. But I, having exercised with the Army and with the Air Force and knowing a certain amount of background on each, I still wanted to follow what had always been my favourite, which was the Navy. And
why were you so interested in that? Your dad had been in the Army, you'd trained with the other two services. I presume there was a naval cadet somewhere in Nottingham. I mean, what?
There was, but there wasn't in Hucknall. There wasn't in Hucknall.
It was relatively further away from Nottingham than it is, seems now, in other words.
Yes, yes.
Now, why were you so keen on the Navy?
I think I was reasonably good at geography. I don't know that that had a big bearing on it, but I was interested in the world, seeing the world, and I thought there was perhaps more chance of doing so by going for the Navy. Join the Navy and see the world was the old saying, and that had always appealed to me from a very young age. So I went down to London Road, the school on London Road, where all the volunteering was done in those days, and put my name down.
Now, what happened when you put your name down?
I'm not sure. I think probably one had to go back to get the medical. You didn't get it done at the time, but that started things in motion, and as I'd volunteered for the Navy, I suppose they took brief details of one's background, one's accomplishments at school and the rest of it. And I joined what was called the Y Scheme, which was a scheme for getting young educated people into the officer class. And the notion was that when one joined up, you went through the course to become a midshipman and sort of Dartmouth beckoned and all the rest of it. And because of I went down to Cambridge for an interview to get on the Y Scheme.
And this would be, it looks like April 1943.
Probably. April 43, I went down to Cambridge.
And what happened there?
We went through a briefing, a couple of briefings, brief examinations, that showed that we were reasonably able to be accepted onto the scheme. They didn't want to overload the scheme, obviously, but they wanted to see if they were giving enough choice to people. And after passing this Cambridge test, which was probably only a one-day job, one returns home, and they sort of say, well, whenever we can, we'll give you a call and in you come.
Now, in the meantime, we'll come back to when you get called up, actually, because that's in June, it looks like, from the papers.
Yes.
So it's a couple of months later. What were you working after? When did you leave school, and what work did you go into, or did you just work for your dad? I mean,
yes. When I left school, I imagine that would be September 42. Or we left school July 42, presumably. Yes, I did almost immediately, thinking, well, I've got to fill in here somewhere. There's only limited numbers of things one can do with 6 months, 9 months, or whatever it would be, before call-up became inevitable. So that the obvious thing was to join the company of my father's firm, and they were always looking for people, almost always looking for people anyway. So that I became what was virtually a junior mechanic. And the company made underwear, principally, certainly in the war days. And a lot of that underwear went in for the services. All types, for the Army, Air Force and so on, but mostly the Army. And the factory itself was almost inevitably it had always got a couple of Army inspectors. They used to measure quality and everything else. They went through bundles and bundles of underwear that had been produced for the troops to make sure that the quality was being maintained. Very much, I think, like the type of thing that Marks and Spencer do, a constant examination. And as a junior mechanic, I was involved in keeping the knitting machines running. And that was quite an operation in those days, because nowadays each machine has its own built-in engine and the rest of it. In those days, all the machines were belt-driven from an overhead pulley system, and the electricity in those days was DC, of course, I think, and that made things very complicated. The machine had to be run up, and the pulley started, and the flapping and clacking of the belts as they went down to the machines and so on. And it was a full-time job keeping a room of knitting machines going properly.
Now, had you had any mechanical training, or did your dad just sort that out for you? I mean,
yes, the training was given on the machines, of course. Yes, but I suppose I got a certain amount of latitude with the connection with management, as it were, and therefore I was involved in a lot of other things on the place as well. I don't know really whether it's a point to mention here, but our head mechanic, was a chap who became a millionaire and was extremely well known in the area and in many places, because he set up eventually after the war on other things. The name was Jack Bonser. He started towards the end of the war on making greenhouses. And of course, there was an absolute dearth of greenhouses and things after the war. They'd gone into disrepair. this seems a long jump, possibly. But he was the head mechanic, and the two under mechanics, shift mechanics, as we would say, because we will use it during the war, we were principally on two shifts rather than three. They joined him, and the three of them were involved in building up this greenhouse company.
Now, so you were working in the factory full time until you were called up in June 43,
yes.
Looks like.
Yes.
Well, the dates come from your parchment, you know. Now.
Ah, yes. Thinking I was doing a university course in textiles, of course. I'd forgotten that.
Now, when did you start that?
It must have been when I left school.
Were you actually going to university or
yes.
doing a course at the university?
I went down to the university. It was, I presume it was a full-time course. Now, that is surprising. I can't remember. And that...
That's at Nottingham University.
Nottingham University, Goldsmith Street, the textile university as it is now, still, I think. It's been all involved now in Trent University, I think. But it was the textile section of Nottingham University. Professor Davis.
So that's where you're getting the theoretical background
yes.
for your future career as a textile.
Indeed, yes, yes.
Now tell me about the actual call-up. That was in June.
Yes.
1943, according to this. You got to Ganges on the 7th, anyway. And that's where you were sent, wasn't it?
Yes.
How did you feel about your call-up? I mean, you volunteered, so...
Yes, obviously looking forward to it, to an extent, although it was such a totally different atmosphere to anything that I'd had previously. Sort of... shipping out from home by train, getting down to Ipswich, getting out of the train along with probably several hundred, or no, perhaps not as many as that, but 100 other similar 17 or 18 year olds. And there was the petty officer hollering, fall out and get into this block in the station forecourt and so on. Buses are due to arrive any moment. And within a few minutes, along came the buses and we got on there and we were shipped off down to Shotley.
To HMS Ganges.
To Ganges.
Shore Station.
Yes. The Shore Station.
And what was your reception like there when you got there? You arrive as a civilian, don't you, really?
You
and
do.
And then within a few minutes, you're not.
Yes. I don't remember details of the reception, but it was obviously fairly good. They fed us, I think, which was probably something that breaks people in a little bit. You're issued, I suppose, with a knife, fork and spoon and a plate, and you go along and you do a food collection, rather like a cafeteria, and that, and for a lot of people, that was perhaps the first time that they'd done that type of thing. And then you're in this sort of reception centre virtually overnight, I think. You're there for perhaps a couple of days, I can't really recall. But it would be the following day, I think, that we were issued with our uniform.
Now tell me about what you can remember of what you were kitted out with.
Very difficult. Whether we got two uniforms at the start or not, I don't know. I think it's possible that we didn't. We perhaps got just one at the start. And you were issued with instructions as to what you were to do and what not to do. I think somebody demonstrated to you how you you put on your collar and all the rest of it, because the navy collar, of course, has to be put on correctly, and you have to have the bow right and the lanyard right and the rest of it. And I think these were demonstrated, and I'm sure a lot of us looked very odd when we were getting fitted up. And the hammock and the kit bag became part of our equipment and stayed with us for the rest of the service, I suppose. We didn't use the hammock, of course, at Ganges. When we moved into Ganges proper, we were in the annex originally. When we got to Ganges proper, then we were in bunk beds.
What were the huts like? Oh, I presume they were huts. I mean, or barracks. What were they like?
I think they were fairly useful, substantial buildings. Ganges was had been there a long while. They weren't a wartime.
So they were more barracks than huts.
They were indeed, I think.
And what were they like? How many to a room, and what was the sort of?
Oh, I would estimate it might have been, I don't know, 24, 40 even to a barrack room in Ganges. And of course there were rows and rows of these. It was one looks back on them and they're rather like the prison camps and the rest of it, the army camps generally, with rows of these.
And what were they single bunks or doubles?
I think they were two deck, yes, double decks, I think. In some places anyway, I can remember being in single beds, but I can't remember if that was Ganges or not.
And was the room reason? I mean, did you have anywhere to put your stuff? I mean,
I think we got lockers, a locker with each bed, and of course we hadn't got a lot of stuff anyway. The civilian kit that we'd had, I think we probably parcelled up and dispatched when we were in the annex, but these things are rather hazy with time.